always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach, Goldberg and Ramil, talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news, got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. See geek for the cheap. But today got the heat.
And now, your locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, that music means it's Free Talk Friday. That means no ads, no breaks, just talking on through. No time limit, talking about whatever we want to talk about. And today, we're going to talk about some power rankings in the Eastern Conference. We haven't done that this week, so we're going to rank all 15 teams in the East. We're going to talk about the first results from the All-Star Game voting. But first, guys, before we jump into the show, we're going to do something that we don't do a whole lot of, and we're just going to make a very humble ask of you, the audience. We have a brand new Patreon page that you can find by going to patreon.com/lockedonheat. And we're asking for people to commit to pledging just $1 a month to help us improve the quality of the show. So check it out. Please take a look, and if you're so inclined to help us out and improve your own listening experience, you could donate to our fund.
Absolutely. Look, we love doing the show, but what we put out there is a free podcast, and we spend a lot of time and effort trying to make it the best daily podcast that we can for you, our listeners. And so in order for us to keep doing that, all we need is 20 listeners, just a handful of you, to pledge $1 a month. That would cover the overhead for the software that we're looking to adopt and use. And you may have noticed that the audio quality has improved recently, and that's because we're using the software on a free trial basis. Unfortunately, that expires soon, so we need your help.
So by going to patreon.com/lockedonheat and becoming a patron, you will become an official Locked On Heat board member. So that's what you get out of it. David and I like to hear from you pretty often, and by creating this board, we will have a group of dedicated listeners to bounce ideas for the show off of and whatever else we might think of, just a kind of an audience to poll. And you'll have an opportunity to help influence the podcast that way. And you also get to say cool things to your friends like, hey, I'm on a board.
Yeah, we're just asking you to show your support for what we're doing. You know, you provide support in other ways, but this is just one extra way that we're asking for it. Hopefully we can keep doing this show for you, our listeners, for a very long time. We want to improve the audio quality. And from there, as we get more pledges, patrons, and of course, board members, we'll use the money to further enhance the show and maybe feed the hosts here and there.
So please go check it out. Again, it's patreon.com/lockedonheat. That's patreon.com/lockedonheat. Help us help you. Now let's get into the show, David. Let's start with our Eastern Conference power rankings. We try to do this every week, but you and I don't think have done it in a while. So we're going to do it now. We used to just do the top eight, but now we're going to expand it to the top 15 because it's Free Talk Friday and we're free to do anything we want.
Absolutely.
So we usually started from the top and then went down, but let's do the reverse. Let's start from the bottom and go up because I think the top of the Eastern Conference is more interesting right now than it's ever been. So at my last place team in the East, and tell me if you disagree, is Atlanta.
Yeah. The Hawks are a pretty bad mess right now. And that just stings the all that much more that they were able to defeat Miami a couple weeks ago. That one really hurts. That might be I think it was last year where there was a bad loss to the Knicks that kind of really kept us out of the playoff momentum there. Yeah. And I think this could be the one for Miami this year, that Hawks loss.
Well, hopefully not. And you know, Atlanta is actively tanking, so I think they're exactly where I want to be. Dennis Schroeder taking that layup with like less than a second left when they were down by three the other night was just hilarious. So we have Atlanta there. I've got Chicago at 14, second worst team in the East. Do you disagree?
You know, I think they're actually playing a lot better. And having covered the Magic for as much as I have recently, it's a toss up and a difficult one for me. I've actually got Orlando They're worse record-wise right now by a small margin.
You know what? You're right, because they've won one game out of their last 10. Orlando's worse right now. I should switch that.
It's so bad. I don't know what's going on there. Like, they've lost all hope and all faith. I mean, they lost Nick Vucevic to injury. Next thing you know, they've lost 22 of 25 games or something like that. It's unbelievable.
So do you have Chicago at 13 then?
Yes, I do.
Right, the 13th, the bottom three is the same then, basically, because you already convinced me to move. I didn't think enough about the bottom three because I don't care enough. Those three teams, that might be your top. I mean, they're going to be – all three of them have a very good chance of being the top five in the lottery. So, I think that's where they want to be, except for Orlando.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think Orlando.
Oh, yeah, they're all in on winning. No, they're all in, and they're apparently going to be active in the trade deadline. So get yourself an Elfrid Payton while you can.
Yeah, there you go. All right, number 12. So 12 to like 10. So 15 to 13 are basically interchangeable for me, Chicago, Orlando, Atlanta. The next three, 12 to 10, is kind of interchangeable for me as well. I've got Brooklyn at 12, Charlotte at 11, the Knicks at 10.
That's probably pretty fair, to be honest with you. I think that's about where I stand. I think Brooklyn is really showing some improvement. I mean, we've come to associate them with being such a bad team for so long that we don't really take anything they do seriously, but they try very hard, and they certainly spanked Miami last week. So they've really improved their effort overall. I think Kenny Atkinson has done a really, really good job shaping something out of the players there. Spencer Dinwiddie is doing a pretty good job at running the point there.
Chris LeVert looks good.
Yes, he does.
It's a shame that D'Angelo Russell isn't playing, because he was playing so well through those first 12 games. He's been injured.
Right.
If they had Russell, I mean, this is a team that could conceive – if they had D'Angelo Russell, this is not a team that wouldn't – they'd probably be in the playoff discussion, right? Because they're only right now four games out of the Eastern Conference playoffs. You would think that by losing D'Angelo Russell, who is easily their best player, you'd think that they would get at least into that conversation. So
I agree.
I've got – unfortunately, he's out, so that's the problem. But right now, I've got Charlotte – just ahead of them. They're one of the worst shooting teams in the NBA. I just covered them in Sacramento. They think that they're turning a corner, but I just think that they're being optimistic, because what else can you do throughout an 82 game season? I don't think they're turning a corner. I think this is just a team that is full of streaky shooters, and streaky shooters are going to be streaky shooters. That's just the way they are. Jeremy Lamb, they haven't gotten as much out of him as they want. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is an offensive negative, like, to the extremest point. Like, I don't want to hear Heat fans complain about Justice Winslow until you've watched MKG. I mean, he doesn't even do anything. He doesn't do the little things that Winslow does either, as far as ball handling or setting screens either. I mean, they literally just put him in the corner and say, just stay as far away from the basket as possible. I think Charlotte is you look at it on its face, and they should be better, right? Highly regarded coaching staff, you know, a top 40 player like Kemba Walker, nice veterans like Nick Batum, Dwight Howard, guys like that. But I think those are all – the pieces don't quite fit, and they don't quite work, and it looks like they're going to miss the playoffs for the second straight year. So I don't look at them as a team that's very good. I think they're a little overrated as far as what people think they should be.
Yeah, they also don't strike me as having the kind of personnel that could all of a sudden click into place and make a strong playoff push in the second half of the season. You know, that they're going to continue to get strong production out of Kemba Walker, assuming he stays healthy. You know, if Batum improves a little bit, that'll help, you know, snatch a win here and there. But I think they've gone everything they possibly could out of Howard. And you have to start to wonder whether or not he's just that much of a negative presence. I hate kind of falling into any kind of narrative like that, but the reality is that it just seems to follow him.
I was in that locker room. He was the best presence in that locker room.
As far as like overall joyousness?
Just engaging teammates. Just like it was after a win, and that locker room just doesn't look like they're having fun. With the exception of Jeremy Lamb, who was just singing a Kodak Black verse over and over again.
I'm sorry.
And not doing a good job at all. Like, there are some NBA players that you can overhear singing every once in a while, and it's like, you know what? Not bad for being in the shower. Not bad. But Jeremy Lamb should not open his mouth.
It's better than what I heard out of the Houston Rockets locker room last time I was in there.
So as bad as that commercial where they're singing the Backstreet Boys, the State Farm commercial?
No, it wasn't singing. It was a bodily noise. Let's just leave it at that.
Oh my God. All right, let's move on. The New York Knicks. look, I kind of like the Knicks a little bit this season. Porzingis and Kanter, that combo is kind of keeping them afloat. You know, they haven't played super well lately, but I've just overall been more – I think I said that when they won like 10 games or something, like they might have won as many games as they'll win all year or close to it. But they're 18-20. They're in the playoff conversation. Porzingis is just really good. They're getting good play out of Jarrett Jack, which pains me to say because Jarrett Jack has been one of my least favorite players to watch in the NBA for the last half decade. I just can't stand watching them. But look, they're getting some good minutes from him, and Kanter and Porzingis are good enough to keep you in games. And then Frankie Ntilikina is just he's a good point guard. I mean, defensively he's impenetrable, and offensively he's doing enough ball handling to just kind of be passable. So
I am a little surprised that you haven't brought up the incredible production of one Michael Beasley. I mean, that's you've fallen off the face of the Be Easy movement.
Let's let you do it.
All right. Well, you know, I read a piece by Mark Berman over at the New York Post about how – did you read that? About his resentment towards Spoelstra. Like, he says there's no love lost because I don't think he understands what that term means. But he's implying that there's no resentment on his end, and maybe that's the case. But he also says that Spoelstra wasn't exactly in his corner. And I can believe that. And then he's also saying, you know, he also explains or justifies his tenure in Miami, saying that he was shouldering a lot of the blame for the defensive issues and that a lot of guys weren't playing defense. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. It was a very strange period in time there, that 2008 through 2010 prior to the Big Three. And look, he's playing great for New York. We'll see them tonight or whenever you listen to this. Hopefully Miami will have escaped with a victory at home on Friday against the New York Knicks. But we'll see how Beasley responds to being back at the American Airlines Arena.
All right, number nine, I have the Indiana Pacers. So this is where I think things start getting interesting. These are the real – this top nine in the East, I think your eight playoff teams are going to come from this top nine. And I've got Indiana at nine. Look, they're 3-7 in their last 10. I think the shine of the Victor Oladipo being better than we thought he was and Domantas Sabonis playing well for them and just Miles Turner just being a good player overall, I think the shine of all of it is starting to wear off. They're 500 right now after having one of the best starts in the league. And I said this for a long time. I was not a believer in the Pacers, and I think it's starting to show that they're not as good as we thought as their record was. I think they're still good. I still think they're good enough to make the playoffs, even though I'm not sure that they will. But the bottom line is they have, like, I don't even know if it matters if you're Indiana because you have traded Paul George, and once you do that, you trade a player of the caliber of Paul George, you basically assume you're going into the tank, right? Most teams would just be like one of the top five teams in the lottery at that point. But they're managing to stay afloat because Victor Oladipo has been such a good return for them. I mean, when a player basically demands to get traded and you get a player like Oladipo back, who, and we're going to talk about all-star voting a little later in the show, looks like he's going to be an all-star this year, that's a huge return for them. And that's going to kind of jumpstart their rebuild a little bit more. And I think that's what matters for Indiana.
Yeah, it kind of, at least emotionally, spiritually, it kind of reminds me of that 2003-04 Miami Heat season. You know, it was the loss of Alonzo Mourning. He signs with the New Jersey Nets at that point to join Jason Kidd. And it's an end of an era in Miami. And then you're kind of looking at what you have left on the roster. You're able to, you know, snag Lamar Odom away from the Clippers. You've got a young Caron Butler, and you're not sure what you're getting out of him. You've got Brian Grant, who's kind of limited in what he can do. And then you get this rookie, Dwayne Wade. And you know, it's funny because the comparisons between Oladipo and Dwayne Wade have continued for quite some time. And he's finally starting to play at that incredible level that we expected, you know, him to be able to reach at some point. And I think, like you just said, you know, the fact that they were supposed to be much worse than this and that they've gotten this kind of production has to feel so good for a Pacers fan. Like, to have lived under the shadow of George's potential departure and knowing he kind of – look, they have some unnecessary resentment towards George, but I think he actually helped out the franchise as much as possible because they were able to get something back for him. He could have stayed there miserably, played badly this season, and then walked anyway.
Right.
So I think they should be very glad that he left the way he did and that he was in communication with the front office. But from the fan perspective, they've got a good team there and a good foundation for a future piece.
All right, let's get into our top eight. This is the meat of it. I've got Philadelphia at eight. I've got Philadelphia at eight. Look, they're 4-6 in their last 10. And I've been watching a lot of the 76ers this year for obvious reasons. Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid are just fun to watch. And Brett Brown coaches a good team. But it's obvious that they're still missing a shot creator on offense. I mean, there's been a few times late in games where, look, Embiid is tall enough and skilled enough that he could basically get his own shot, but he's not necessarily creating his own shot all the time. I think, you know, he gets a lot of pick and pop situations. He's got a nice turnaround jumper. He's got that he has a good feel for, but he's not a shot creator in the way that maybe a James Harden is or a Russell Westbrook is, who could just kind of take the ball in his hands and make something happen. Ben Simmons isn't necessarily that either. He can make things happen for teammates, but he's not the guy that you necessarily want at the end of games to be shooting the ball. So I think, you know, we talk a lot about what the 76ers are and how they might not necessarily even need Markel Fultz, but I think that they do need Markel Fultz because Fultz is that guy. He is the guy who at the end of a ball game, you put the ball in his hands and can make something happen for himself. I mean, once he gets back from injury and if he plays the way that the 76ers hope he plays and develops, he's going to be really important for that team. But he is really that kind of player is what they're missing right now. And that's why I have him down at eight, where I think I've had him as high as four in the past. So I've got him down at eight right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about Philadelphia that you haven't covered. Yeah, they are at eight right now, I think, just because they're still struggling. And I can't help but think, like, J.J. Redick is a fine veteran addition there, and they've got other guys like Amir Johnson and stuff like that. But at the same time, the strength of their lineup is still very young and untested, and they're going to go through incredible amount of growing pains over the next couple of weeks there as they try to carve out, you know, to firmly establish their identity and understand that you have to bounce back over the course of the season. I mean, they're probably struggling in a lot of different ways as far as they're just the kind of toll that the season takes on you. The physical joy that we saw from them weeks ago hasn't been there, right? Like I don't think that Embiid has been nearly as vociferous as he once was, you know, like as he was like back in November when he was dominating and stuff like that. Not to say that he's not being dominant, but it's just, I think the shine is off a little bit, like you said. So I'm concerned to see, you know, how they turn it around.
It is a shame that Deion Waiters is injured right now and might have to have ankle surgery, because he would be the perfect guy to fill in while Fultz is coming back. I mean, an Amir Johnson for Waiters trade would be perfect for them, just to have a guy who could do some stuff at the end of a game. All right, number seven, who do you have?
I've got Detroit. I think
you seem very stressed out about that.
No, well, because I'm still, look, Miami beat a bad Detroit team that was struggling with injuries, but I think Miami's going to continue to get better. You know, obviously, we see the team quite a bit. We have the belief that they'll be able to turn things around and cement the strong version of play that we've seen from them. Like, they're 7-3. I think they're my sixth place team. I think Detroit is my seventh place team, just because I think they're still going to be losing Reggie Jackson for a few more weeks. And he is an impactful player on that roster. They need somebody like that. Look, they've gotten strong contributions from Luke Kennard that I didn't anticipate at the start of the season. You know, Tolliver has been a nice addition. Tobias Harris probably got shafted in the All-Star vote, and he was probably much more deserving. Drummond certainly got shafted, and he's definitely deserving. You know, obviously we'll talk about these later, but you know, I still think that they're a good team, and obviously you and I both like Van Gundy as a coach. So
I think it's like what you said in our preview and pointing out, there's just not a whole lot after that. There's not a whole lot of depth there. And especially in the way of playmaking. I mean, Ish Smith does everything he can with what he has, and you appreciate his story, you know, being cut and traded by five different teams. But finding a place in the league. But Detroit, there's just, I never liked them. I never trusted them. I don't like Reggie Jackson as a point guard. I don't know that there's more there. And if they're going to be a playoff team, they need to get more from him. He's been fine. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that there is that playoff gear there. And Drummond has been really good, but he's by far their best player. Tobias Harris is fine too, but again, I don't know that there's much more there to Tobias Harris than what we're already seeing. And if I'm looking at teams right now that are ranked above Detroit, I think that all of these teams that I have ranked above Detroit have players that can offer more. I think we've seen the best Detroit has to offer, really. I mean, outside of Andre Drummond, and I don't know what a player like him with his, you know, traditional center with his skill set, how important and impactful that even is in today's NBA. So, number six, you had Miami. I have Milwaukee.
Oh, wow. You're leapfrogging the Bucks, huh?
Just
interesting.
Just in regards to what have you done for me lately, Milwaukee's defense has fallen apart defensively. They're 22nd in the league in defensive rating over the last 10 games. They, despite trading for Eric Bledsoe, and look, I talked to Jason Kidd after they made that Eric Bledsoe trade, and he said having two elite on-ball defenders like Giannis and Bledsoe is going to basically help the defense. And he sold me on that idea, but he's been wrong. I mean, that it hasn't. It's maybe made it a little bit better, but the defense is just not good still. And the problem there is that they're asking too much of too many players. And if this was still a team that wasn't, that didn't have a top five NBA player like Giannis Antetokounmpo is, that would be fine. If they were still building for 2, 3, 4 years from now, that would be fine. But they're not. They're built. This is a team that can win right now. And unfortunately, that defense can't win right now. I mean, Milwaukee, from an offensive rating, defensive rating standpoint, looks a lot like the Cavaliers. But I think Cleveland has that extra gear to get to, that Milwaukee is basically doing everything they can to get there, and they can't, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's from a personnel standpoint, there's a deficiency there, specifically in the front court. I think they really just need somebody who's a rim protector. And I'm not doing all of this to preface a Hassan Whiteside trade idea. I'm just saying, like, even if they had somebody like Zaza Pachulia, who they once had, you know, their defense was pretty good, was above average when they had Zaza in there. They just somebody who could just stand there and protect the rim. Like Robin Lopez would be the perfect fit in Milwaukee right now. Like,
interesting.
So I have them at six just because their defense has been so bad. So I have Miami at five.
Okay. Now sell me on that, because I'd like to be able to believe that. But, I mean, Miami has strung some nice wins together. They're getting some really great play out of Kelly Olynyk, et cetera. We get this. But, I mean, aren't you concerned that maybe with Deion potentially out for the rest of the year, that that maybe this team just won't have another gear to click into? No. I mean, that they just – no?
You know? I'm not – I actually think that if Waiters is out for the rest of the season, that might be the best possible thing for this Heat team.
Wow.
I talked so much about the fact that Deion Waiters was the top guy on the team in usage rating while he was playing. And that should not be the case. It just should not be the case. I mean, Goran Dragic should easily be number one in usage rating. And since Waiters has been out, these last two Dragic games have been huge. I mean, he is just leading the offense. He's leading the charge. There's no question about who's bringing the ball up. The only time somebody else brings the ball up is when there is a play designed for Dragic to get the ball or touch the ball still. Like, you'll see Kelly Olynyk get them into their offense, or Josh Richardson. They've got a couple of sets where Josh Richardson brings the ball up and they use Goran Dragic's three-point shooting, you know, as a floor spacer. And that's fine. You don't want Dragic to have the ball all the time, but he has the ball so much more without Waiters being in there. And Tyler Johnson has been excellent as a starter. I mean, defensively, he's bringing more effort than Waiters is bringing. Offensively, he's a better shooter than Waiters was this season. I like Tyler Johnson in that starting unit. I like getting more playing time for Wayne Ellington. Josh Richardson's playing like 38 minutes a game, and that's not an issue. I'm not worried at all about Waiters. And look, they get Hassan Whiteside back. He's playing well. As we said in our recap of the Pistons win, we're cautiously optimistic that he'll continue this level of play as far as passing the ball and not being a complete black hole offensively. Olynyk is playing out of his mind, and from everything we're reading and hearing, it just seems like that the Heat believed that he could do this. This isn't a surprise for them. That's why they signed him, is that they thought that there was this level to Olynyk, and it looks like right now that they're right. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. Their offensive rating has improved from 103.4 points per 100 possessions to 106.5. So their offense is just skyrocketed, and their defense is still good. So And they're starting to get guys back. James Johnson's back. Whiteside's back. Dragic is playing well. It looks like he's probably maybe a little bit healthier than he was earlier in the season. I like where the Heat are going. I really do. And I like them better than anybody else we've talked about so far.
All right. You've convinced me. It didn't take much, obviously. I saw some mention there about Justice Winslow, if he's going to be returning soon and whether or not he'd be best suited to return to the starting lineup. I'm with you. I think Tyler starting is probably working best if you're going to continue to have Kelly Olynyk as your starter because of what he can do and what he's been able to bring to the table. So for me, I mean, obviously you're going to have to gauge it based on certain matchups on a night-to-night basis. But for the most part, I like the starting lineup that we're currently trotting out there with Whiteside, Olynyk, and then Richardson, Johnson, and Dragic, obviously.
And like so we saw against Detroit, I mean, if it doesn't work, you just take James Johnson off the bench and go small.
Sure.
Like there's right. so much more versatility there that I don't even think a team like Milwaukee has. Like Milwaukee has a bunch of really versatile players, like Giannis, obviously, and then they have Chris Middleton. Tony Snell is a pretty versatile defender. A nice 3-point shooter for them. Bledsoe can guard a bunch of different positions despite his size. But as far as just roster versatility, I think Miami has the most of anybody that we're kind of talking about so far. Just as far as the styles that they can play. And Spoelstra's been really good at monitoring what they need to do to win games. And they also have the best coach in the Eastern Conference. That helps them too.
Not according to Michael Beasley.
Spo can't hold a clipboard to Jeff Hornacek, I guess. So I got Miami.
Or Kurt Rambis. He says Kurt Rambis is a coach he trusts.
Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. I've got the Washington Wizards at 4. I got Washington at 4. Wall and Beal has been awesome. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. That starting unit of Wall, Beal, Kelly Oubre, Porter, and Gortat is as good as any fivesome in the league. I mean that's a five man unit is a plus 20.4 on the season so far. I mean that is right there with Cleveland and Golden State and Oklahoma City and whoever else you want to talk about. That they're really good, and Beal is leading that team in scoring. Wall is just having another great John Wall season, and Porter is just, I don't think I've seen him miss a shot this year. So they're playing great.
Yeah, no, I agree. They're definitely my fourth best team there. I don't have much else to offer. Yeah. In fact, I think we're pretty – I'm sure we're probably in the same order as far as our last three or best three anyway.
Who's your three? Cleveland. Oh, okay, we are then. I've got Cleveland number three. They're still working Isaiah Thomas in. But he did – look, the Cavaliers, I'll say this. I had a hard time just putting them at three, but I felt like I had to just based on how well Toronto and Boston are playing right now.
Right.
But when Cleveland, and granted it was against Portland, and Portland is a team, like they're fine. They're like 500, just as far as the way they're playing. I don't know what their record is right now. But they were plus 17 with Isaiah Thomas in there. And that Isaiah Thomas-LeBron James duo looked good. But defensively, they're still one of the worst teams in the league, and I can't justify putting them higher than where they're at.
Right. No, that's fair. What do you see about the Toronto Raptors? That's an upcoming matchup for the Heat next week. Obviously they're playing at a very high level. I assume you have them second overall in the Eastern Conference.
I do. Okay. I do. Look, DeMar DeRozan shooting three pointers and making them at a high level has changed that team completely. Not just the offense, but the team completely. They play with a bit more of a pace to them now. Defensively, they're just, I feel like they play faster defensively than they did before, where I thought they were just kind of not, you know, that whole team is just kind of taking it up a notch from these previous versions of the Raptors that we've seen. And in the last 10 games, they're second in the East in offensive rating, third in defensive rating. So they're the only team in the East in the top three in both of those categories. They're playing out of their mind lately. I mean, that's just a really good basketball team.
Yeah, I actually considered putting them at first, but you know, obviously with Boston's strong start, it was hard to kind of mess that order around. But people who we trust have said that this version of the Toronto Raptors team is potentially the best Raptors team ever. Although they probably have the same limited ceiling that they have in the past. Like the reality is, I don't know that Boston or Toronto or anybody in the East can get past Cleveland. Like, as long as LeBron James is still, you know, alive and playing basketball, there's a good chance he's going to get out of the Eastern Conference. And that's a shame because, again, we'll, a team like Toronto is going to be denied, and who knows what the future holds for them as they face salary cap issues, et cetera. But right now, they've got a very good, versatile cast. I mean, guys like DeLon Wright are contributing. Van Vliet is contributing at a high level. Wichita State Cyclone, you know, I mean, and you know, a guy that we liked in the draft, OG Anunoby, that we weren't sure about regarding his leg injury. They're saying that he is still far from 100%, that he doesn't have the explosiveness that he did in his first year in Indiana, but he's still playing at such a high level, and he is such an X factor for that Raptors
such
team.
Such a steal for them. That was such a steal for them.
Unbelievable. I mean, to see guys like him and Mitchell slide in the draft a little bit, and then to see them thrive the way they have, and even a guy like Kyle Kuzma, obviously, you know, all the Lakers hype notwithstanding, just to see guys kind of like flourish in the tail end of the draft there, it's been really impressive. And a guy like an Anunoby who's still working himself back into form is just playing a perfect role in this Toronto team, and it's really impressive. I like his ceiling, and I like the team ceiling overall, even though it still might be a limited one.
Number one, we have Boston. Look, it's the best defense in the NBA basically all season. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They just beat the Cavaliers and the Rockets. Granted, the Cavs were without Isaiah Thomas, and the Rockets didn't have James Harden, but the Celtics are just really good. They're really good. That wing tandem of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Tatum is just doing things that he was not. I don't know if this is Danny Ainge magic. Everybody kind of credits Ainge for just trading down from Fultz and taking Tatum, like as if Tatum were actually the best player in the draft. Tatum has taken his game up from his last year and his only year at Duke. He's a better defensive player than he ever showed in college. He's shooting threes better than he ever showed in college. Like we give a lot of credit to Ainge for doing that. We need to start giving more credit to Tatum because he has taken his game to another level. And credit Ainge for believing in him, but Tatum is taking his game to another level. And Jaylen Brown is playing awesome defensively for them, doing just enough offensively as well. I mean, and Al Horford is just, he should be an all-star this year. And I don't know if he will, but he should be. And Kyrie Irving's just been the perfect fit for them at point guard. So they're great.
I give no credit to Ainge whatsoever for the Tatum growth, the unexpected Tatum growth, because the reality is he wouldn't have been playing more than a few minutes a game if not for the Gordon Hayward injury. So there was no way. Like, this is, it's setting him up for the future, and that's fine. But who knows? Like, at this point in time, you've got a guy who could potentially be an all-star. And that's
– he's so good.
Yeah, he could be a potential all-star his rookie season. He could continue to have an all-star type career, and nobody even knows about it if Gordon Hayward stays healthy. And you hate for that to happen, but there's two words that I always remember when it comes to situations like that, and that's Wally Pipp. Do you know who Wally Pipp is?
No.
He's a first baseman for the New York Yankees who supposedly sat out one game because he had a headache, and he told the team manager, you know, let the rookie play. And it was a guy by the name of Lou Gehrig. And then he went on to play several hundreds of games and never relinquished his spot. And now that's part mythology, part baseball lore and everything else. But it just kind of, it's interesting to figure it out, you know, in hindsight, what Tatum's career might have been like if not for Hayward's injury. But he's made
it. You're saying that the Celtics should just trade Gordon Hayward.
I actually am considering that. I really do think that. I love their ceiling with Hayward, and it's never bad to have too many really quality players, but I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't entertain it and possibly get more assets out of it. Look, they're a team that's built for the next decade with the assets they have, the young players that they have. They get his expensive contract off the books, and they're still playing at such a high level. I can't see why they wouldn't consider it, to be 100% honest with you.
All right, let's have this conversation. I mean, if you think about what the Celtics need from Gordon Hayward. Now, let's not talk about the regular season. Let's think about the playoffs. What can Gordon Hayward give you in the playoffs that any team in the playoffs would want, right? He gives you two-way play. He's a good defender. He can guard he could probably guard three positions. He's guarded Blake Griffin in the playoffs. Like guarded, he could guard the three and the two. And he can switch onto the one pretty well. So he can guard three or four positions. Offensively, he could create his own shot a little bit, but he's going to make the right offensive play. He's athletic enough that he can create his own shot and get his own shot off. These are all things that you're going to want from any team is going to want in the playoffs. Jason Tatum gives you all of those things. And this ceiling is giving you all of those things all the time. I don't know. Look, if I'm Boston, I still don't trade Hayward. I still, you want to wait and see what the team looks like, because you could basically have a starting unit of, I guess, right, Al Horford, Jaylen Brown is your stretch four, Tatum, Hayward, Kyrie. That's really good still.
That is a hell of a lineup. Yeah. I mean, with three potential, four potential all-stars on there with Hayward, et cetera. I mean, but look, we're also, it's a huge assumption that Hayward's going to come back at 100%. And you know, we never know what, with an injury like this, you assume he's going to be able to bounce back. There's been some talk that he might be available for the playoffs. That seems very, very, very unlikely.
You think they do Hayward for Whiteside and Winslow? I'm just kidding. I don't want to do that. All right. Those are our power rankings then. That was fun. We agree on a lot of stuff on the show. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the All-Star voting. The first returns came in a couple days ago or yesterday, whatever, depending on when you're listening to this, doesn't matter. So let's look at the Eastern Conference first. Anything that you disagree with, David, in the Eastern Conference as far as who the top three front court guys are going to be and the top two guards are going to be, because that's going to determine the starters?
No, I think Embiid is probably deserving, to be 100% honest with you, despite the number of games that he sat out or whatever. I think he's shown enough this year, unlike last year, to warrant his selection. And I know
we should probably say who they are. So we got Giannis Antetokounmpo, LeBron James, and Joel Embiid are your top three in the front court, and Kyrie Irving and DeMar DeRozan are your top two guards. So that's the Eastern Conference starters if the voting ended today. And you're saying, yeah, so you like Embiid there. I agree with you. I think Embiid is deserving so far.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a case for Horford as a good role player. But, I mean, look, he fits the Celtics team and what they currently need out of him. As far as all-star games are concerned, I think you want somebody who embodies the flashiness and the I don't care about anything attitude that Embiid certainly does. And he fits that perfectly. I think he's going to be the all-star and deserving. And look, and as far as DeRozan is concerned, I've seen some people argue against it. I think Toronto is one of those teams that you don't respect enough because they're either in Canada, because they fall apart in the playoffs, et cetera. But DeRozan has changed his game somewhat. He's still a high-volume shooter. He still gets to the line a lot, but he's supplementing that with some real, real playmaking across the board and some, of course, floor spacing, as you mentioned earlier. So I think he's definitely deserving. Maybe, again, some people will say, oh, maybe it's Kyrie Irving. Maybe it's a Kyle Lowry instead of DeRozan. I think DeRozan's been a little bit better this year.
I agree. Lowry is as good as he's ever been. But again, DeRozan starting to shoot those threes, it just changes so much of what they're doing. And as far as just being an isolation scorer, there are not many guys that are better than DeMar DeRozan in the league. You can make a case for John Wall. He's been playing great all year. Sure. I think he's upped his defense a little bit more too after kind of falling off the last couple of years. Victor Oladipo's been amazing. I'd be fine with him. What I like about the Eastern Conference, the way the voting is structured right now, it's a true five-man unit. You know, with the guard, just labeling everybody guards and front court players, you can kind of get like weird lineups. But if this were the lineup, I mean, Embiid at center with Giannis at your stretch four, LeBron at small forward, DeRozan at shooting guard, and Kyrie Irving at your point guard, that's a fun team that I would like to watch. You know, in the All-Star game start. Just a couple weird things. Dwayne Wade still getting love. He was sixth in the East in voting among guards. Yeah. And Isaiah Thomas, he's played 17 minutes all season or something like that, and he's seventh in the NBA. Isaiah Thomas over Lowry, over Bradley Beal, over Jaylen Brown. But Isaiah Thomas being over Lowry and Beal is insane. But that's how fan voting works. What you want to go to the Western Conference, or are you done with the East?
Well, no, I mean, a couple things here as far as the East is concerned. Jaylen Brown, I mean, I think that's the Celtics contingent and obviously the strong record there. But, I mean, guys like Kemba Walker are probably much more deserving of that. And then the front court, Enes Kanter and Dwight Howard. I mean, that's ludicrous.
Yeah, you got New York and then the people that still vote for Dwight Howard for stuff.
Yeah. China. Right? Doesn't he have like a huge following in China because of his tenure?
China. Front court in the West. In the West, we've got Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, and DeMarcus Cousins, your top three front court guys, and your top two guards are Steph Curry and James Harden. Let's start with the guards there. So we got Curry and Harden in your top two, and then we got Westbrook and Klay Thompson for 3 and 4. Manu, all the way up at 5. He's having a nice year for them. Not much I have. Curry and Harden, those are your guards this year. Even despite Curry missing a few games, he's been unbelievable this year. So yeah. I have no problem with that. Westbrook's starting to come along, and he might end up snatching one of those spots if the voting breaks his way, which it can. But he's still like 150,000 votes out from Harden. I mean, you can make that up in an afternoon, but still, I think Curry and Harden, that makes sense for me.
Well, I mean, a lot of people are thinking about the Harden injury impacting his MVP campaign. I don't think that's fair either. But as far as the All-Star, that will probably impact him somewhat as well. But he's expected to bounce back before the All-Star selection is finalized. So I'm sure it's just what he does with Houston. I mean, he's certainly deserving. If you like that style or dislike it, whatever. You can't deny its overall impact, and he certainly makes it. And then as far as the front court is concerned, some interesting selections there. KD and Anthony Davis, I think they're both very deserving. I just wrote a piece today for FanRag Sports about the Pelicans, and it just strikes me how odd that people, I think, disrespect – or not even disrespect. I hate that word and the way it's overused. But, I think he's just kind of somebody you tend to ignore. Like I think basketball fans – I'm sorry?
It's the market. Nobody watches New Orleans games.
I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it is. They're also
not on TV.
They're also a very blah team. You can read the piece if you want to, but you know their offense is really good. Their defense is really bad. Davis is kind of not underwhelming as far as his play is concerned, but it hasn't translated into any kind of immediate wins. Like they're one game over 500. Yeah. They win some, they lose some. They have really strong showings, and then they kind of fall apart. They lost to Dallas. I mean, it's ridiculous.
That team should be more fun to watch than it is. You know, I think when they traded for Cousins in the first place, I for one, was really excited to see how the Brow and Boogie thing would work. But there's only so many times I can watch a high-low play between those two before I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, there's only so many times I can watch them set screens in a horn set where I'm just like, okay, I get it. Those are the two things that they do with them. And it works because they're both singularly great talents. And like you said, it's a really good offensive team. But defensively, it's still limited. There's nobody else on that team that I even care at all about watching.
Drew Holiday.
Really, you're making a joke. So it's I don't care about watching anybody else on that team.
It's who I wrote about, so I'm kind of pitching it a little bit. But at the same time, you're right. It's
definitely go check out the piece. Definitely, it's worth – not a team worth watching, but definitely a team worth reading about.
There you go. Thank you so much.
Less time to read about them than to watch a whole game. So,
I have a bone to pick with the Cousins selection. I think his numbers are spectacular. I mean, he's the team's leading scorer. Yeah. He's shooting really well from the perimeter. He's a hell of a passer, a solid rebounder, obviously, at his size. He does a lot of things. He doesn't play defense all the time. He's not always engaged, so I have a problem with that. But as great as he is, I think I'd rather have a guy like Draymond Green in there as a starter. What about you?
I mean, I'd rather, if I were coaching the team, have Draymond Green in there. But Cousins' stats, they're so good. I mean, they really are. It's hard. This is where we get into the argument about, do you want the guy with the best stats, or do you want the better player? Because unfortunately, you know, Draymond Green is playing out of his mind defensively again. You know, he's such a good defender, and it's just unbelievable what the things he does when you watch him. But that doesn't necessarily show up in the stat sheet. So can you, in good conscience, keep Cousins out of there because his stats are just so ridiculous this year? I would almost say, is it worth taking Anthony Davis out of there? Because I feel like his stats aren't as good. You know, Cousins has played – he's scoring 26 points a game, 12.5 rebounds a game, 5.1 assists a game. He's shooting 35.7% from three-point range. He's played 37 games. Anthony Davis has played 32 games. And his stats are good across the board, but they're just not as good. Like, he doesn't have – he's 25 – literally a hair below – what DeMarcus Cousins is doing from points wise, but not as many rebounds, two fewer rebounds a game. Cousins is getting nearly double the assists that Davis has, more steals. He's played more games again. I'd almost say if you're going to take anybody out of there, it might be Anthony Davis that you take out. And if you do that, You know, Kawhi is sixth in voting in the front court. He hasn't played, or he has played a little bit, but he hasn't played for most of the season. If he had been healthy, I think he gets one of these top three spots. I'd almost say, okay, maybe if we had a little bit more time, Kawhi could work his way in there, and then we had Durant, Kawhi, and Cousins as your front court. I'd be fine with putting Draymond Green in there again. So, I think of those three, I think the guy you have to drop out is Anthony Davis, unfortunately, not DeMarcus Cousins.
I don't know. He's a better defender overall for sure. So I think his impact is greater as far as what he's doing for that team. But maybe along the same lines, you look at the All-Star game as just a form of entertainment. Boogie's probably much more entertaining than anybody else on the Pelicans roster. So maybe he's more deserving. I don't know. I'm curious to see how it all works out. To think that that team could have two All-Star players on there and potentially not make the playoffs. They're like clinging to the eighth seed in the West right now, and the Clippers right. are looking much better. That should be interesting.
Yeah. Anything else? I mean, Kyle Kuzma's there at 9. Good for him. I love Kuzma. If the Pelicans had Kuzma, I'd watch the Pelicans more. But he's 9th. He's 9th, which is insane. But that's the Lakers fans contingency getting him up there. Yeah. I kind of hope that Kuzma keeps going up. I like the Kuzma story. There's nobody else. Like Lonzo Ball is on 8th in the guards. That's crazy.
I don't think Carmelo belongs in that top 10 either. The same way Dwayne Wade doesn't.
Is Carmelo Anthony better than Joe Johnson?
Over the course of his career or this season?
No, just this year, like right now. Like, who's better? I feel like they're giving you the same stuff.
Maybe. I haven't seen Joe play this year, to be honest with you. So, I mean, I know he was injured a lot. But
Jimmy Butler at 10 among guards.
That's ridiculous. He needs to get up there.
He needs to be higher. He needs to certainly have more votes than Lonzo Ball. He's like 30,000 shy right now. It's nuts. So, all right. Well, this has been Free Talk Friday. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. You can send mailbag questions for next week and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of CeeLo Keys. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.